What's up, AfterBuzzers, and welcome to the Expanse After Show. Today we're talking about The Seventh Man, and it's episode 7. Go figure. And we have some very special guests. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
What's up, guys? We're back for another exciting episode of The Expanse. And like I said, we're talking about episode 7, which is The Seventh Man. My name is Carrie Lane. You can find me online at Carrie D Lane. That's K-A-R-I-D-L-A-N-E. And I'm here with my regular co-host.
Hey, guys. Maria over here. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Maria Cavazzuto.
And our very special guests, we have the authors of the Expanse series, Ty and Daniel, otherwise known as James S.A. Corey. Welcome, guys.
Hey.
if you want to explain how you have one name as your author name, because if people have no idea about the books.
Well, kind of a long story. I have this thing about pseudonyms. I write under a bunch of different names and kind of one for each project, so that if you're expecting it to be an epic fantasy, you know that from the name of the author. When we started doing Space Opera together, I had written a few books and told Ty that this was normal, and he believed me, and so we put together a pseudonym specifically for the project.
Nice. And then already we have someone in the chat, Pamela. She said squee, so she's very excited to have you as our guest, as we are too.
Thank you, Pamela.
Squee to you too.
How has the response been from fans of the books and then those who have not known the books but then find out it's a book series as well?
Well, I mean, it's largely been very positive. You know, there's always people who read the book and got a very specific vision of it in their head, and when the movie or TV show doesn't exactly match that vision, are unhappy with that. And I can't blame those people. I mean, if they love the books enough that they want a really specific version of it, then that's great. I'm happy that there are fans. But most people understand that the media is different, you know, that TV is going to be different from a book and from a movie, and they're okay with it. And seem to really like what we're doing.
And actually, to piggyback on that really quickly, what has your guys' response been to the show, given that things obviously have been changed? But are you guys, you know, happy with those changes? Are you guys fans of the show as well?
I'm afraid we're responsible for a lot of the changes. We are more involved in the show than anybody who is an author has any right to be. We are supervising producers on the show. We've been in the writing room for both seasons. We've written scripts for both seasons. We've been in Toronto filming. Ty spent all of first season from the first day of filming to wrap up there. If anything really sucks about this show, we're going to carry some of the blame for that.
Now, how that is a pretty unique experience for authors to be part of a show as much as you are. Do you kind of find this as an opportunity to explore alternate versions to stories that you had worked on that you're like, oh, wait, we can change it up, and it's a perfect avenue to play around with?
Totally.
You know, honestly, we did get to do a few things that we might have done differently if we went back in time. One of the things that I always wished we had done in the first book was get our bad guys on screen sooner. Mm. And we were able, in the show, we were able to do that, introduce some of those characters much earlier. So you feel like you know who they are before our main characters run into them, which I think is a great change. And I was really happy with. And there's been a few other things like that where
there were the ones that surprised me are the ones that, you know, I hadn't ever thought about it, and I didn't even really understand what it was going to be like until I saw it on the screen. I know putting Amos and Cortazar together in the second season, I wish I'd thought of that. That's awesome. They have a lot to say to each other that they don't get to say in the books.
And they have some fantastic scenes together. And, you know, the big one that people talk about is moving Avasarala up in the story so that she's in there right from the beginning. And that was a fantastic decision that we didn't actually make. It was suggested by our executive producer Sharon Hall when we were developing the first season. She said we would love to see this character right from the beginning, and boy was she right. I think that was absolutely the right choice.
We totally agree on the show because we talk about how completely badass she is, and she's so strong, mm-hmm. and she's such a central character. So we're so happy that we got to see her from the beginning.
And I agree with Pamela in the chat. This she says, this is actually the first time I've read the books first and still like the adaptation. Personally, I watched season one, then read the books, and then right now I'm kind of at the beginning of Caliban's War and going along with the episodes almost. And it's really fascinating because then I can't really do predictions, but it's fun because some of it is different.
Yeah. So. And that's going to keep being true. This retelling in the screen is diverging in a bunch of the particulars, even while we're trying to stick close to the main points in the basic story.
I think that actually makes it more fun. I mean, if we did just an exact version of the books on the screen, I don't know how much fun that would be to watch if you've read the books.
But, plus, which there's a bunch of stuff that works in book doesn't work on the
screen.
Sure,
yes. But even that aside, just knowing that in any given episode, something there may be a surprise you didn't see coming, even if you've read the books, or a twist on something that you couldn't predict, at least keeps it fresh and interesting.
And something I think both we've had Dominique as a guest and Noreen a little bit ago, and I liked how both of them commented that whatever changes are made, they're really well thought out and given a good reason. And as someone who read some of the books, you go, oh yeah, no, okay, that I get that. And it was like, you know, you're happy that they didn't just do something just to change it.
We've had a very good experience with the writers, with Noreen especially. He's really good at building a team and having us all kind of come together and think through what we're doing and talk it through and get rid of all of the crappy ideas.
Yeah, he actually said when we first started this, he said, when you buy something that's already popular, like a book series or comic books or something like that you're going to adapt to the screen, the important thing to remember is that it's already popular for a reason. And any changes mm-hmm. that you make, you got to be careful not to break the thing that's good about it, because you'll lose the audience that comes from the book or the comic book or whatever, and it's not necessarily going to get you a new audience, so you may wind up losing everybody.
Good point. And yeah, sorry, Noreen. I'm like, I wanted to say Noreen. I'm like, wait, no, wrong one.
That's much better than anything we talk to him. Our names for him are much worse.
I prefer to call him Dr. Shank.
Oh, okay.
He hates that.
Now, how long did it actually take you to write the books? Like, even at just the first one, how long does it take to do something like that?
About a year.
And did
yeah, the first book actually came about because Ty had been doing this thing where he had built all the world, and I had some experience doing books, and we kind of got together and did the thing. He had his day off was Wednesdays, mm-hmm. so I'd come over to his place on Wednesdays. So Leviathan Wakes was written on Wednesdays, over the course of a year.
Yeah.
And then it's been about 1 year since then.
Nice.
Great.
And something we've talked about, especially when Dominique was here, was the amazing casting that's been done and just the diversity of cast and the fact that they are so diverse in the books as well. How do you feel about how the casting's been done on this show?
Well, it's great. And fortunately, we've been really involved in it. In the first season when we were casting, I was watching all of the audition tapes right along with the executive producers, Mark and Hawk and Noreen. The three of them were doing the casting, and I was sitting right there with them watching and giving my notes and comments. And there have been a couple of actors that I really was pretty passionate in arguing for. And, you know, we've cast several of those people, and they have all turned out great. So I got very lucky that I didn't pick somebody terrible. Mm-hmm. But they've always listened to us. I mean, in the first season, Daniel and I both argued very fervently for Florence, who plays Julie Mao. And she hadn't had a lot of screen presence yet. I mean, she hadn't had a lot of acting parts before that. So she was a bit of an unknown, but she turned out great. And in the second season, he and I were both 100% on Frankie for Bobby Draper, and again, somebody who hadn't had a ton of acting credits, but right out of the gate has just been a force on the show.
Oh yeah, we love Bobby.
It also goes back to what Noreen was saying about not breaking what's good about the thing that you've bought. Mm. I mean, we wrote the books with the idea that the future that we aspire to write about should be at least as diverse and interesting and complex as our day-to-day lives now. And that got to be something that we carried through into the translation.
Nice. Let's dive into the episode, and feel free to add any commentary on your thoughts on what happened too. So the beginning kind of opens up with almost morbidly beautiful blood snowflakes.
Yeah. And, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, because I was like, oh, those are kind of, oh, that's blood, and yeah. And
but it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's like the other, it's like the protomolecule. It's like weirdly, and like a space angel, was that what
yes.
we called Julie when she was in, on Eros?
The space angel, blue space angel. Yeah, Bobby's waking up, and she gets rescued and popped out of her suit. Now, this is a little bit different from the books, and if you want to talk about briefly of why that changed, because it was, in the books, as I recall, and this is my reading comprehension of it, she has a much better recording of it on her suit, and she got blasted away by the mirrors falling. It wasn't necessarily the thing right in her face, but it seems to have changed a little bit.
Yeah, a decision was made early on to play more into the sort of the trauma and mystery of what happened to Bobby rather than play the cards face up as just a straight war story. And to do that, we had to sort of get rid of the permanent record on her suit, because then anybody could just watch it and go, oh yeah, that's clearly what happened. So that was a early writing decision. And so the Bobby's early journey is less about having fought a monster, and more about, you know, questioning her own memory of those events, having people not really understand what she's trying to explain to them, or even maybe they do understand, but they have their own agendas about it, to start her in a much less certain place so we can build her up to the point where she becomes much more certain and begins to take decisive action later.
And it also means instead of doing the whole Ganymede action sequence at one moment, we get to kind of take little bits and dribs and drabs of it over several episodes. So, you know, we have to kind of spread the cool across the show like peanut butter.
Yeah, they're kind of gaslighting her later. They're like, what are you talking about? Don't talk about that thing. And she's like, but I saw it.
But that's exactly what I saw. Why wouldn't
it's like,
I?
Oh, so frustrating. You're it like, is I feel for you.
Now, trust me, that will come back to haunt them at some point.
I don't doubt that. That's what happens on this show all the time.
We do have a question. Latrish Gig says, gotta know, as a former U.S. Army captain, how they created the military tactics and procedures of the MCRN, specifically Bobby's reaction to the engagement in Ganymede orbit.
You know, I mean, it's Hollywooded up a little bit. You got a bunch of Hollywood writers who've never been in the military sort of writing their version of it. They did try to use as much from the books as they could, and all of that comes from my own research into how the military works, and having come from a military family with an uncle who was a Marine, and my grandfather was a naval gunner's mate. So, you know, I had some personal experience with those things. Some of that makes it through the translation and some of it doesn't, but you know, it's not going to look like a modern military tactical manual, unfortunately. Don't have the space to do it right.
Well, it is outer space and all, and Martian, so I think you have some creative liberties there. Yeah.
Well, I do have one answer. So people kept saying, you know, if they think they're going to get a gunfight, why don't they take cover? Why don't they lay prone to put less of their body visible to gunfire? And we actually do have a good answer for that, in that Ganymede is several hundred degrees below zero, and you want as little of your body touching the ice as possible.
Oh, that's a great response.
I like that. Then we have a little bit more info with the UN, where they're like, okay, so the mirrors were hit, because we also kind of had that question last week where we had another host here, and I was asking them of like, so what do you think actually happened?
Right.
Because it's like, you don't want to get too far ahead. And they point out how Ganymede is a breadbasket for the interplanetary areas, and Avasarala is, let's invite Mars for a peace talk. Aaron Wright is like, no, let's escalate the problem.
I know, Aaron Wright. It's just bad news.
Right? You're just like, don't trust him at all.
Yeah.
And then I love the line, and some of these lines I know are probably changed from the book, and how much do you enjoy hearing them? Vassarol is asked, like, why didn't you run for office? And she's like, I like getting shit done.
Oh, I love that line.
Yes! So I was
going to... we love Vassarol. In the books, I mean, the books, and she gets to be a lot looser with her language. Even even than our second season, somewhat relaxed standards are.
We smile pretty much anytime she gets to swear. It's just so fun.
Because on top of that, I mean, as this is more like obviously the visual part of the television and whatnot in the show, she just looks so gorgeous and stuff and so put together, and then all of a sudden you have her cursing left and right like a sailor. It's just like one of the coolest things to watch. Like, I love it.
Someone reached out to me on Twitter and they didn't take credit for it. They're like, somebody else wrote it, is that she's like silk covered razors.
Whoever said that is totally on point.
It's like, yes. Okay, we got a couple more questions. Dan says, which nation is actually more powerful, Mars or Earth, or are they both equal?
Well, Earth has way more people. Mm-hmm. They have a bigger industrial base, of course. And they have free breathable air outside. Those are all pretty big tactical advantages. The way we played it in the books and in the show is that Mars has... sort of a technical advantage. They're more advanced technologically. They have the best scientists in the system.
Mm-hmm.
That's really sort of where we're playing it right now. The truth is, though, and this becomes more and more apparent as you read further into the books, that Mars' dream of ever conquering Earth was pretty silly to begin with. There's just a ton of people. Even if you just gave every Earth person a rock, they could just overwhelm and win against a few high-tech Martian Marines.
Wow.
But they could very easily cripple Earth and maintain their independence and hegemony over the outer system.
Yes.
Mm. I mean, there's lots of ways to play it.
Yeah. Without getting too much detail, because I feel it'd reveal spoilers, Pamela in the chat says, how far in advance was the planning of the world building? And points out that some things aren't mentioned till later, so we'll just say, how far in advance was the planning of the world building?
For the show or for just in general? Because, I mean, it's two different things. In general, you know, I was working on elements of this for other projects, you know, 15 years ago, maybe even longer.
Oh, wow.
And so those elements have been in there. For the show... you know, when we're writing scripts and talking about future scripts, obviously, you know, we're all discussing what elements we need to reveal and need to hold till later. So those conversations do happen in the writer's room. If somebody wants to put something in a script and we, Daniel and I, know that it's going to step on something in a later book, we'll point that out.
One of the things, though, that makes us useful in the room is that we know what happens in all of the books, including the ones we haven't written yet. So... if there's something that's going to happen in book 9 that we need to not have, you know, happen in the show, we can say that. We know what the all of the books are going to be. We know what the last line of the last book is. So in that sense, the world building for the whole project is more or less done and was before we started the first script.
How many books will there be total?
There will be 9 books and a book of short stories.
Nice. Then we get back to jumping on to Ganymede. They have all the relief ships. Drummer gets that phone call from Anderson Dawes. And for a second, I was like, he's still alive?
Like, oh, yeah. I thought the same thing. I was like, wait, where was he?
And then apparently he's running series. And Naomi's line, it's about time a Belter was. I was like, I want to root for you. But it just felt weird.
It did. Because... then when we obviously get to Anderson Dawes, I mean, he's out for the belt, and, like, that's pretty much it. And I feel like it's not the right answer, you know? There has to be something.
You're not a belter. You might have to change your opinion if you were a belter. To have somebody say, oh, no, by God, we should be taken care of. That's not something they hear very often.
I mean, that is a good point. If I was a belter, maybe I'd feel differently.
One of our mandates in the show is that there are no good guys and there are no bad guys. So you know, every time you see a group like the Belt and you go, oh, they're clearly the oppressed minority, they're clearly the good guys, later episodes are gonna cast a little shadow on that. So we do keep everybody guessing on on who they should root for.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I like that because I've changed sides many times.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that.
I've generally rooted for the belt if only rooting for the underdog, but I feel every side has somebody you want to root for.
Totally.
Which makes it more engaging as a show.
Yeah.
Then we have our crew, our main group of people handing out aid, and Amos with the little kid and his, like, you know, unnerving of, like, oh, what happened to you? And we kind of learned about that a little bit later. Do we get more of that info later on?
We dribble it out a little bit at a time.
Okay.
I mean, there are a lot of clues in there. You can pretty much put together a solid hypothesis of what you got right now.
Mm. Okay. Well, Jim in the chat really liked your answer about the world building and what your information on where we'll, how long the stories will be. And he says, I've gotten nervous a bunch of times this season thinking the story was going off the rails, but so far I've been proven wrong every time.
So, well, thank you, Jim.
And one of the things that's really interesting about doing a translation like this is figuring out what you're being loyal to in the translation. And you can be loyal to all the details, and then the main story kind of changes on you because of the shift in medium. Right. Or you can be really loyal to the main story and change whatever you need to do along the way to get the same effect. And that's kind of what we're trying to do with that.
I think it's been going very well so far. Yes. I agree with the chat. I'm like, yeah. We have Bobby waking up with Officer Thornton. I didn't quite... Thornton?
Thorson.
Thank you. Sometimes you're like, wait, what's their name? Subtitles weren't working when I watched it.
I kept looking at his nameplate because I was like, just in case.
I have to watch everything in subtitles because I'm like, wait, what?
No, me too. Just because I literally don't want to miss anything.
Yes. But Bobby sadly finds out nobody else in her group survived. She goes, oh, my suit feed was lost. So is her... I mean, we'll find out later, but can you say if officially the feed on her suit is lost at this point?
It is not available to her.
Okay. Because then...
But that doesn't mean it's lost. It just means it's not available to her.
Yes.
No, I was being coy. I can neither confirm nor deny.
Fair exactly. Enough. But it makes more emphasis on the drones, which they weren't in the book, were they?
No, the drones in the Ag Dome, the Ag Dome was not in the book, but it makes it easier to tell part of the story.
And it will matter.
Yes.
Yeah, it feels like
I like the use of the drones, and then I'm okay. Because at first, I will admit, last episode, when we saw previews for this week, I wasn't really happy with where Bobby was, what was going to happen. But, you know, it's just the previews. But this makes the drones more interesting because her suit doesn't have the info. So you go, oh, okay. So, again, a way that it shifts, but you make
more
sense.
We also saw a bunch of other cool technology, I guess, is somewhat of what you could call it. Those pills that kind of help her open her mind. We'll get to that
later.
But, so that kind of serves that. I'm not sure if that's in the books at all, but it was very cool.
You've seen those before.
Yes, it was when they did the interview with Naomi and all the people on the Marship.
Okay, but that's part of the books, though. So that's been, like, that's included. I didn't read the book, so...
it was on the show.
No, but I'm asking, is it part of the books as well?
In the first book, the Martian who interrogates the Rossi crew takes what he's calling focus drugs.
Mm.
And those little clear pills are the TV version of the focus drugs.
Gotcha. Got it. Now I remember exactly the scene because I remember the Martian guy. I remember it very well. Okay.
Then we have Dr. Cortazar, and the creepy thing you learn is he chose to make his brain damage permanent. Amos talking with him.
The way he talks, specifically Cortazar, it kind of like gives me all sorts of just horrible feelings inside.
Yes.
Because he's just like, you know, talking about guilt and need and all this stuff. And it's almost like such a negative way talking about his mother or whatnot. It just feels so negative. But at the same time, you can understand, like, he has no empathy at this point. So.
Yeah.
Give credit to the actor there. That is a fantastic performance.
Oh, yeah.
He's doing a great job.
Yeah, he's excellent in that. It's very well done.
We learn that Amos lost his mom and a woman named Lydia, but we don't know more details on that. Protomolecule only moves forward, which I feel that's semi-foreshadowing of something.
Okay.
Your poker faces might need to work on those. It's all right.
I could be lying. I don't know.
True. We got Johnson talking with the people, like, we are Belters, and they need a representative, and Dawes is suggested, and he takes it. But, I am suspicious about Dawes.
Oh, 100%.
Yes. But I like the part of how Belters share everything and they're not about possession the way Earth is totally about it. And yeah. I'm like, absolutely makes sense.
Yeah.
Naomi was backing up in that scene and like, oh, because the threat's gone. And you're just like, Naomi, you didn't get rid of it. It's still there.
No, I know. She just wants to like call less attention to herself in any way possible. She's kind of hiding.
Dawes pointing out how Holden's the idealist, which we've all talked about.
Yeah.
Oh, and then we get Naomi and Holden arguing, and it's like, she goes, well, this is Earth telling Belters what to do. And you're like, well, you're not wrong, but I don't like seeing them argue.
No, me either.
We want them, not that they need to have the perfect happy relationship or anything.
That's not realistic but either, but
it's more like, it's something that they can't really get past. They really need to elaborate to get past that in an argument, because it's just like you're arguing with each other's identity.
Well, exactly. But that's a huge kind of, that's a huge theme in this show. And yes. You see it all the time. So it's it's bound to get to them, too.
And we were hoping that we could play through some of the politics in very personal mm-hmm. ways with them. And they're kind of built for it.
Yeah.
So I got it, and I wonder if you got it, Maria, and then if you gentlemen would like to elaborate. Jim says, I don't really understand what Amos wanted walking into the room with Cortazar. Could you guys elaborate, or are we supposed to be wondering? I think he was considering doing the procedure himself.
That's the same thing that I thought, and I was hoping that that's not true. Like, that's not even close, and that I'm horribly wrong, because that's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
Well, I think there's a hint in an earlier episode where the doctor is describing the surgical procedure that was done to Cortazar, and Amos's question is it reversible?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I think that's the hint to that moment.
And that answer is no. So
I thought it was already done to Amos.
But didn't he say that it was
temporary? No.
What was done to Amos was not surgical.
Yeah.
But didn't Cortazar say that it was temporary?
And then
he chose to make it permanent?
That's true.
Because it was in his first day. He was like, I love this.
Keep it.
You know, so I didn't understand. Maybe I'm not sure if I'm wrong there, but it said it was temporary.
No, that's right. Yeah, the way he describes it, he was given a temporary version of it, and while he was under mm-hmm. the influence of that, they said, do you want to keep this, or do you want to go back? And he was like, no, this is awesome. And they made it permanent. Yeah.
Which, in fairness, not an ethical way to go about that.
Yeah, no.
No.
Putting somebody under the influence before you ask them questions is probably not ethical.
Would you like to ever not be drunk again? No, I want to be drunk forever. Okay.
Mm-hmm. No. Totally
not unethical.
Yeah, we have Bobby. We kind of mentioned her special interview. And I was a little bit annoyed, but it took her a while to get to it. She goes, yeah, they're firing at us. And we were like, no, they're not.
Yeah.
They're not. But finally later, she has her discussion with the officer and goes, wait, no, they weren't firing at us. And we see the slice marks again, because we had that discussion of what was it. And some people in the comments were like, wait, what are you talking about? Slice, like a you know, an animal kind of rip. But we see better the blue skull face thing. It's not in a vac suit. And
it's not in a vac suit.
Not in a vac suit. I was almost finished. Well,
that was her, like, epiphany. She's like, wait a minute.
I was going to say, let's finish off her bit is, Bobby gets the Purple Heart, which I almost was like, I felt they were just, like, buttering her up.
I felt like they were buttering her up, because it's like, okay, so also, you're going to Earth, mm-hmm. But you can't say anything, so here's a Purple Heart, so you stay quiet, and I don't think that's going to go very well.
Yeah. They're like, don't talk about that thing. Don't talk about it. And she's like, okay. Yeah. Don't trust it at all.
No.
Then we got, Holden, Dawes, and Naomi, when they're like, he's like, saving the belt, and there's, like, another card to play. Oh, and he's so suspicious staring at Naomi, too. He's like, so Naomi, that thing that you're hiding, I can tell you're lying. He's so good on that. But Holden has a great line, too, of, like, we're all in this together or we're all lost.
Yeah.
I actually thought when he went up on the when he got up in the night, I thought he was going to figure out that Naomi didn't destroy the protomolecule.
Oh, yeah, that would have been...
I was like, oh, no! Oh,
that would have been shit hitting the fan.
That would have been a different thing. But then Dawes is going around asking questions to everybody. He even goes to Drummer. So they had a history. Is that a thing in the books?
Yeah. Actually, it's hinted at in one of the novellas.
Okay.
When Dawes, in the novella, it's a short story, The Butcher of Anderson Station,
mm-hmm.
when Dawes... captures Fred, kidnaps Fred,
and recruits
and recruits him into the OPA. There is a woman with Dawes who is pointing a gun at Fred's head the whole time, in case he, you know, decides to start some nonsense and take him out. So when Kara G, the actress who plays drummer, she read a bunch of stuff preparing for the part, and one thing she read was Butcher Vanderson Station, and she came to me later, she's like, oh, could I be the woman with the gun? And I was like, yeah, totally. Why not? Why can't that be drummer?
That's cool.
So that's why, you know, that's why they seem to have that bit of history together, and we're going to keep playing up. We're going to keep playing with that as the show goes on, that they have this past together.
I like it. Made my skin crawl a little bit, though. I was like,
I mean, yeah, because duh. But I mean,
but I like the Twitter. There was a conversation on Twitter. I almost was shipping Naomi and drummer.
Oh yeah, there was a conversation about that.
Yes, why not?
I like Hold Me better.
Yeah, we said the name for Holden and Naomi is Hold Me.
That's a good one.
That's fine.
I like that one.
Johnson and Holden.
I mean, Naomi needs to have some lady friends.
Yeah, she does. Absolutely.
So we're gonna make sure she has some lady friends.
Yeah,
she can't just have the boys all the time.
Yeah, drummer's a good like counterpart for that. Yes. I think.
Johnson and Holden, the protomolecule is talking to the scientist that there's more out there. So that's when Holden's like, "What do you mean there's more out there?" Diego and Dawes, that's more of Dawes getting info, which I'm like, oh, he's saying all the right things to Diogo. Which are just like, oh, this young impressionable kid.
Yes,
this guy, like, let me tell you everything. Yes.
When was Diogo radicalized?
Okay. As in, like, I feel like that moment with Dawes, he's joined the dark side a little bit.
I think as soon as
From his point of view, it's all a straight line.
Yeah.
Goes a straight line from stealing the water in season one to watching his uncle die to saving, you know, the folks with working with Eros to, you know, this is all part and parcel for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He does.
Then we got Holden when he discovers that Cortazar is gone and he's been, and then we, the viewers, learn Dawes and Diogo took him. More like Dawes and Diogo's along for the ride. And Johnson tries to do
Diogo's
the lockdown.
The pawn.
Yeah. You're just like, no. Rosie does the exciting follow chase scene. That was fun. They did a great job. And yeah, we've talked about how much we love the special effects on this show.
Yeah. The visual effects are great.
It looks amazing. And they cut the engine. They destroy the engine. But it's just Diogo on the ship. And I'm like, oh, it's a decoy! No!
I know. Well, that's what I thought when all of a sudden, when they actually, like, hit the other ship. I'm like, there's no way they're going to catch him this quickly. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
So it was no surprise to me that, like, Diogo was like, what's up?
Yeah. Just in the chat said, we've watched the crew kind of develop their allegiances more strongly this season, Holden with Earth, Alex with Mars, Naomi identifying more as a Belter, but Amos, what's his allegiance? Steve replies, Amos is aligned with the churn and that he adapts to survive. Any comments?
He has his tribe. I mean, and his tribe has gotten bigger this season. I mean, his tribe previously was like Naomi.
Yeah.
Yeah, now his tribe is Holden and Naomi and Alex.
Yes.
With some, you know, speed bumps along the way, but you know, he's kind of locked in on them. And as you saw when somebody threatened Alex, Amos quickly stepped in and took care of that.
This is true. Good final question. Are we any chance we'll see more of the novella content and or characters introduced early?
Seems plausible to me. Can't think why we wouldn't.
All right. Actually, that's a good question. For order of if someone wanted to read the books, would it be better to read... how do you throw in the novellas in your reading process?
That's a good question.
Read them in publication order.
Oh, okay. That's an excellent answer. All right. Any other final thoughts?
No. I'm just excited to see what happens, you know, because I told you it's not the last of the protomolecule. It's not just like it's gone. Hello. So I'm excited to see what happens there. Yeah. I mean, that's all I can say.
And
I will say episode 8, it has my single favorite moment of the entire season.
It's a good moment.
Ooh, okay. Ooh. So we're looking forward to next week then.
We'll be tweeting at you guys after. Be like, I think we found the moment. And
if you start really laughing at something, it's probably a pretty good hint.
Yeah, okay, I like things that make me laugh.
Okay,
we have enjoyed the humor as well. Like, there are the moments, and someone in the chat a couple of weeks ago, I think, with Dominique was asking, like, will there be more funny moments? Because the show does an excellent job in the books of, you know, it's serious and dramatic, and then there's these heartwarming and comedic moments that pop in, and you're like, oh, this is so good.
I know, I know. It lightens definitely, like, all the darkness that they're going through.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I feel this is going to be a reveal, so you can decline to answer. Dan says, can you... will we ever meet the race that made the protomolecule?
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Fair enough. I feel that's a good answer. I'm like, oh, I don't think you can give that away.
No.
I was going to say, speaking of Twitter, where can people find you and reach out to you both after we are done here today?
I have a Twitter handle that is Abraham Hanover. One word, all mushed together. And Ty runs the James S.A. Corey Twitter feed.
Cool. And then you guys are very active on Twitter, which is awesome, and I think the fans very much appreciate it.
Hey, you know, it's an addiction. I'm not sure it's necessarily good for me, but we're there a lot, yeah.
And if you guys are watching at home, please leave comments down below on this video of what you thought of what are your kind of predictions for next week. We'll have to just ask later because I feel we're out of time. But thank you so much for joining us. It was excellent talking about the series.
Thank you guys so much.
Picking your brains about info that we've been wondering about.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And then we'll sign off with you and hopefully be chatting with you again soon.
All right,
thank you.
Bye.
Any other final thoughts you have?
No, I'm excited. You know, I'm still mourning Miller, and I'm going to say this like every week. However, there's a little fly like around my face. they're great. They're hilarious.
Oh, yes.
What was it? Let me just tell you guys this. We were just kind of like watching the feed of Skype and the messaging between, like, you know, our site and them. And they're like, are you guys ready? And they're like, well, you know, we're as ready as we're going to get. We're not going to get any prettier. And I was just like, these guys were funny already. So just so you guys know, that was a little funny bit that I saw.
And well, I'll have to tweet them after, but some great comments in the live chat is well, Trish Gig said, thank you to the best writers in sci-fi. Love you guys. Keep up the great work. Steve says, yes, yes. And then that was great. Pamela says, thanks for the science and science fiction. Yes, it is definitely amazing to watch a science fiction show that is not just the other ones that are more, you know, fantastical or fun too. Sure, but sure. This is nice because it's very grounded and a little more approachable because you go, oh yeah, no, I understand. Of like, it's dangerous to be in outer space.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it's
surprising. You could die.
It's surprising how real this feels. You know.
Yes.
It's not like, you know, Galaxy Quest,
which that's fun too.
Which is so great. Don't get me wrong. I love Galaxy Quest.
Well, thank you so much for watching, and make sure to give the video a thumbs up. Like I said, leave comments down below. What are your predictions for next week? And what do you think of the guests and other thoughts on it? Please no spoilers if you are reading the books. And 5 stars on iTunes. And where can they find you online?
You guys can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Maria Cavasudo.
And thank you again for watching. You can find me online at Carrie D. Lane. That's KARIDLANE. And this is today a fun day because Sword Art Online comes out tonight in theaters. And you should check it out if you're an anime fan or fan of that show. And I will be posting interviews I did with the English voice cast of the series. So, yeah, check those out later. Again, thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you guys next week. All right, bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.